and iTunes International. From the golden sands of Bondi Beach across your world.
Right, okay. This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around your world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. It's very humid and hot here. And I'm joined by Paul and Joe Volta from the fantastic band The Sign, and they are in Tasmania. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, Henry. I'm here. This is Joe. Paulie is doing, he'll be here in a second.
Sure.
10. We're doing well. I know Sydney's hot. Tassie's been a little bit warm.
Yeah.
But it's not as warm as the rest of Australia.
Well, there's a kind of a humidity thing going on in the state of New South Wales here. And it's causing all sorts of storms, which are affecting farms. I mean, you can't win in this country, can you? You just can't win. If it's not one thing, it's another.
Well, Tassie's kind of, we got lucky, I think. We won't perhaps get the same heat as you guys get, but we certainly, at 25, 30, it's like a 40 in Sydney. So.
Oh, is that right? Do you get humidity in Tasmania?
Well, we do. It's unusual to get as high as we've had. Our humidity is down to about 35% at the moment, which is rather nice.
That's beautiful, yes.
Rather than the 70, 85% I think it was yesterday at one point.
Oh, my God. Okay, now I'm guessing that Paul is in the background there. I think I've heard him.
I have my hearing aids now. I can hear.
I just want to start with something that you alerted to me, Joe, and I just want to read a headline from the Australian ABC News website. Tasmanian hempcrete, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, producer X-Hemp warns government regulations may exclude industry from multi-million dollar market. A multi-billion dollar market. Tell me about this.
Well, for some reason, they have put some extremely strict regulations in place. I don't know whether that's to do with the legalization cannabis industry, and they have put hemp in the same category for export. Mm-hmm. But the hempcrete is an amazing. Hempcrete is an amazing product.
What do you do with hempcrete?
You can use it like concrete.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well, it's a building material. Build houses out of it.
Yeah.
And the thing is it doesn't burn.
Yeah, it's non-flammable.
And that means you won't get a house fire, I'm guessing.
That's
kind of cool.
And it's not asbestos.
And it's not asbestos, which turns up everywhere at the moment.
So it's an interesting thing. I don't know how they're going to deal with it, actually. They probably have to make some legislative changes, which for our parliament may be fairly slow because I think they're still on break. Mm. But, yes, they could. It is an amazing industry, and I think we should have been using it probably. I'm all for the uses of hemp in all its forms.
Yes, because I don't know much about this, but it's used in making clothes and that kind of thing. Has there been this stigma against hemp because it is what it is?
Probably the plastics industry.
Yeah, plastics industry.
I mean, you're right. They used to make clothes out of it. They used to make rope out of it.
Levi's were hemp.
There was so many products that were used by hemp.
Here's a side issue. Oil is used extensively in making clothes. And this has been seen by some as being a kind of a bad idea. So I don't know, is there oil in it? Does hemp contain oil?
Yes.
Okay.
It does. But,
I mean,
it has seeds. Hemp seeds have been used in bird food forever.
Right.
But the oil is medicinal oil.
The medicinal, but not...
No, I don't know about the hemp
oil. I don't know from the industrial hemp perspective. But yes, there would be oil, and there's no reason why you couldn't use it.
I noticed that, this is specific to Tasmania, right? This whole deal that's going on, the potential deal. I mean, they're looking to Europe and North America for this. That's a big bloody market.
It's huge.
Mm.
And what about the rest of Australia?
Well,
do we care?
Probably not. And probably looking at the market and whether, I don't know what it's worth per square meter to actually make. Mm. So when you're creating it, what it's actually worth. But because it grows incredibly quickly, it was always a really good fiber for, you can use it for paper, but it was a great fiber for clothing, for rope, for, there's just 1 million uses. And yeah, the fact that we've been so slow, like it was outlawed, there's plenty of history, and there's lots of historical facts on it being used in the States before Hoover decided to outlaw cannabis. And plastic industries, as Paulie said, and also DuPont tires. Yes. So you can sort of see when hemp kind of got sidelined, if you will. Mm. And because Levi's were made out of hemp, they never wore out.
Mm.
And hemp shirts are beautiful.
Mm. Right.
It's because they breathe really well. They're great for an Australian summer.
Indeed. Indeed.
What it could do for the timber industry here, you know, instead of waiting 10 years for a tree to grow, they grow hemp in a year.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, and for the same amount of space that they want to grow trees in, they could grow like 10 times the amount of hemp.
And it's healthier for the soil.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's that? Two questions here. One, why Tasmania? Is it the climate? And two, why are there restrictions on this? Or maybe three questions. Why has America's change in their attitude towards, you know, grass and that kind of thing, has that changed this whole scenario?
It might have, but I think the fact that hemp's, our timber industry is a little bit slow,
mm-hmm,
in the sense that it's still very old-fashioned, bit like the, you know, a bit like the electricity industry really here.
Mm.
Hydro ran the state, and with that, you know, cutting down trees and using it for resources always been there. They keep saying it's renewable, but it's nowhere near the renewability of using hemp.
So why is the government, why are there restrictions?
I'm guessing it's got something to do with the building industry. There may be a couple of really big suppliers of concrete
that are
affected, or that have not, that haven't looked at the concept of actually embracing it.
Mm.
And it's probably cheaper to produce in some ways, and it doesn't set like concrete. It's a different process. And in America, they have a thing, I think it's like plasterboard, isn't it? We don't have it here.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned other industries like concrete, etc. And, of course, the plastic industry. I mean, this must be frightening the hell out of them.
Well, hopefully. I mean, it's just so silly not to look for eco-sustainability in any resources that we may have to established to continue to live on the planet in a proper manner, rather than plastics, which are everywhere. We're killing our oceans and stuff. Hempcrete in itself, I think, is a great idea. I sort of saw it, I think, probably 10, 12 years ago, maybe. There was talk about hempcrete, maybe even longer. Like, you probably, the older hippies would have been talking about it probably 20 years ago as a building material.
You know, it's only occurred to me now that it's called hempcrete as against concrete, right? A bit slow today.
Yes.
So is the temperature in Tasmania?
Sunday, Henry.
Yes, I know. Every day's the same for me, baby.
I'm pretty sure there's a mixture of concrete in and with it, so.
Oh, okay. Well, obviously, maybe there is. But, you know, the Tasmanian temperatures in Tasmania, I'm just trying to work out why Tasmania and not, say, you know, state of Victoria or Queensland. I'm guessing it's down to the weather that this can grow so quickly.
Yeah, look, it likes a temperate rainforest. I don't see why you couldn't grow it alpine.
Everywhere.
I don't see why you couldn't grow it everywhere. Actually, right. Hemp sort of is a weed.
It's a, really,
a very good weed. The good weed.
Yeah, it's a really good weed with a lot of uses, and depending what you're using it for. I mean, obviously, industrial hemp's been grown in India for thousands of years, and probably China.
Right.
So the Asiatic region has been using hemp forever. We're a bit slow to the party, I think, because everyone's gone, and perhaps it's an English thing with oaks, you know, using known trees rather than looking at those things we can actually utilize, bringing hemp in, because hemp isn't obviously a natural, it's not a native here, but it seems to grow very well. So I think they've done the right thing. I think the money that the university is putting into it, or that they're using hempcrete for their own buildings, had a lot of investment coming out of the university, like a lot of sponsors. There are a number of people looking at this, with some very bright people coming out of the university.
And how do you see this going? I've read parts of this article. Are we making tracks? I mean, you know, you're Australian, I'm Irish, and Paul is from the United States. I'm always being critical about Australia. I love Australia, don't get me wrong. I love living here. I love this country. But we seem to just be behind everything.
Yeah. You
know, why can't we get stuff done in this country?
I don't know.
The fact that we sold out all our fiber optic technology early to everyone except us. There's a number of, we seem to sort of do that thing. Nobody wants to put the money into R&D because it's such a small population base. So 25 million people, you're not even at the population base of Tokyo.
So we're exporting intelligence. And creativity in
we have had a brain drain going on probably for 40 years, maybe.
Wasted and wounded, it ain't what the moon did. God, would I paid for now? See you tomorrow, hey Frank, can I borrow a couple of bucks from you to go waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you go waltzing Matilda with me. I'm an innocent victim of a blinded alley, and I'm tired of all these soldiers here. No one speaks English and everything's broken, and my stasis are soaking wet. I do go waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you go waltzing Matilda with me. Now the dogs are barking and the taxi cab's parking, a lot they can do for me. I begged you to stay with me, my shirt open, and I'm down on my knees tonight. Old Bushmills, I staggered, you buried the dagger, your silhouette window light. To go waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you go waltzing Matilda with me. Now I lost my St. Christopher, now that I've kissed her, and the one-armed bandit knows, and the maverick Chinaman, and the cold-blooded signs, and the girl
streets aren't for dreaming, no. Men slaughtered dragnets and the ghosts that sell memories. They want a piece of the action anyhow. Go, old Sing Matilda, old Sing Matilda, you. Go, old Sing Matilda with me. And you can ask any sailor, and the keys from the jailer, and the old men in wheelchairs know that Matilda's the defendant. She killed about 100, and she follows wherever you may go. Old Sing Matilda, old Sing Matilda, you. Go, old Sing Matilda with me. And it's a battered old suitcase to a hotel someplace, and a wound that will never heal. No prima donna, the perfume is on an old shirt that is stained with blood and whiskey. And good night to the street sweepers, the night watchmen, flame keepers. And good night, Matilda.
Just joined us. I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International in Sydney, Australia, and I'm talking with Joe and Paul Volta from the band, the fantastic band The Sign, and we'll play a song at the end of this interview. Guys, I want to talk briefly about the American elections, and I, you know, Paul, I find this very funny that their campaigning starts a whole year before the election, which is always in November. And, you know, I feel like we've just had the midterms, you know. I mean, it hasn't been that recently, but it feels that recently. And all of a sudden, bang, the Iowa caucuses signaled the start of the 2024 US election race, says the ABC, and the state's ready to have its outsized say. This war has begun, and are we going to get hammered with this until November?
I imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah. Do Australians care? Because I feel, you know, I understand it's important for Australia because we do a lot of deals with America, just like we do with China and other countries. But, you know, this is going to get hammered through the media. I'm already beginning it by talking about it now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get hammered with this. And I'm just wondering how, you know, I find it bizarre that the media around the world is so sort of crazy about this stuff and following it. Is this something that we're going to see a change of government in, do you think, guys?
Well, our government or their government?
Sorry, their government. Well, which could lead to our government. Because we just follow everyone.
Well, if you wouldn't want it really to follow suit if you could avoid it, but yes, will Biden probably be not elected?
Mm. I'm sorry, but he needs to
It's on the cards. Yeah. I'd like to see his offsider or the vice president become president.
Camilla Harris? Yeah, I have a lot of time. I was just talking to my girlfriend about her the other day. And I said, I think she should be doing this, not Joe. And she goes, yeah. Why?
Well, he's been the bridesmaid for so many years, Henry.
Of course, as foreign secretary or whatever they call it. What was he? I can't remember.
He was through Obama. He was probably, he's been there for three or four presidents now. So I would have liked to have seen, I think if you're going to have an older person in the White House, Bernie Sanders would have been my choice.
Yeah, but you see, that would never work, Joe, because it just, you know, people, I love Bernie. I love the way he moves his hands and the way he talks with his New York accent. And he's just too damn good to be allowed into power. You know, that's what I think about Bernie.
Yeah, well you want a strong person, don't you?
Well, what I find with politics in most of the so-called Western world is that you can't be extreme in any way. And of course, Bernie, I don't see him as extreme, but if you look at the 50-50 support for either side in the United States, it's very dangerous to have 50% of the people against something in terms of politics, and 50% of the people for something, because you really, it's very, very hard to get a happy nation when the elections come, and Bernie would just, you know, there's no way he could get into power, which is very sad. Do you think Joe Biden is copying a lot of crap because of his age? And I know that he's not much older than his opposition. Well Trump is sure to be in the guy running.
Yeah, yeah. President. It's only 4 years.
Yeah, it's
difference.
4 years difference or something. 77 and 82 or something.
You know, you watch the videos of Biden, and you just see him stumbling and mumbling, and it's just quite. For me, it's sad to watch. You know,
yeah, I agree.
I think it's also poor media capitalizing on those moments.
Well, but the media loves that. I mean,
there
they jump on that.
Those moments.
Well, Trump has moments. My God, Trump had some shit.
He still thinks Obama's in power.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to sort of like go, really? Did you really
say? Did you actually say that?
Yeah, well, yes. He does say things that, you know.
Here's the difference, guys. The difference between Trump and Biden, or anyone else like Obama on the other side of politics, let's say, is that Trump's supporters are so rusted on that he can do anything and say anything, and they just don't care. They're blinded by him.
Yeah,
they're militant.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas Biden, the
they're
people,
so anti-left.
Yeah. So Biden is, you know, I agree with you, Paul. I think, you know, I think it's too late to bring in Camilla. In fact, I know it's too late. They're not going to change leader. They're not going to change who's going to go for leader in November at this point, are they?
No.
If she was to take the mantle early, if she fell into the mantle, say, in the next month.
Yeah. Do you think that's possible?
He would either have to have a major medical incident.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Something would have to take him out of the running. Would they put her forward? Well, you know, it's a woman in the White House, and also a woman of different, you know, it's still a racial thing.
Yes,
it's
of course.
Always be a racial thing.
Mm. Yeah, well, they nearly got a woman into the White House last time, and of all people, Donald Trump stopped that happening.
Mm. Well, you could sort of see. Look, the thing is that I think there's going to be a lot more scandal as this progresses. We've got a lot of movement with the Epstein and Maxwell information, which is starting to make everyone very uncomfortable, I think. So there could be some really big. There could be some really big stuff happen before the elections, and they are still toying with this idea that Donald Trump may not be eligible to run. Now,
all to do with legal stuff, yeah?
Yeah. Mm. So if it comes down to, see, if he gets criminally convicted of anything, he is out of the race. If they find he caused the insurrection, you know, and he's off the ballot at the moment in one state with Maine following behind, each state has the right to remove him from the ballot and each state has a right for their Supreme Court to do so, and then it would have to come back, or back, it would have to do round robin again.
Now, two states have already done this, am I correct in that?
Yes, two states have done it.
Do you think that'll build?
Look, I don't know. They're obviously Democratic states, which, you know, but will it stand? Possibly. And depending on the legal arguments that are used, I mean, they're, you know, the argument's looking pretty good, but is he an officer of the United States? One would probably have to argue that all our elected officials are officers of the state.
Yes.
Is the officer have to be a military officer?
Mm-hmm.
And then because there's something in the Constitution that says president elects these military officers.
Yeah.
So can he be made to stand, you know, can he be forced out of the election on that basis? It's possible. But I think they're trying to sort of maintain some sort of civility because of the possibility that his supporters, if they were able to run an insurrection in the White House on that fateful day.
January 6th, yeah.
What would they do if he is refused on the ballot?
Mm.
So this is where you sort of, you know, he's very popular amongst a certain demographic.
Yes.
And there's a lot more of them than of any other visible supporters.
Why is, you know, I've talked with our American correspondents in depth about DeSantis in the state of Florida, because we've got a correspondent there. And I just ask the question of our American correspondents all the time. Why does Trump have this massive support? I mean, he's so far ahead of DeSantis out of the race now, but there's someone else, I can't remember who. Why is America thinking like this? I just never get my head around this stuff.
I think he just relates to the average person. You know, he's
working class kind of thing.
Sort of.
Mm.
You know, so, and that's what everybody likes, because everybody hates the establishment, even though he's part of the establishment.
but he doesn't play the game, though.
Yeah, he doesn't play the game like the rest of them do. And unfortunately, though, I firmly believe that they're all corrupt and they should all leave. And we should have a whole new set of congressmen and the other people that are congressmen and senators. They all need to go.
Yeah.
They really do. They
and it won't happen, though, will it?
Replaced by, I don't know who else, but
somebody else.
The system, you're in the system. You know, and you're going to play the game. You're going to make money from shares,
insider trading.
You know, I just read somewhere where the U.S. Senate outdid Wall Street.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Well, yeah, because, you know, they know what's going to happen, and there's, you know, corruption and insider trading that anybody would go to jail for, but they don't.
I'm sure I've asked you before, Paul, because you are from Rochester in New York. do you vote in American elections?
Not anymore.
But you see, here's the thing. Here in Australia, you have to vote. It's compulsory.
Yeah, I vote here. I don't vote there.
You vote in Australia for Australian elections. Is that right?
Yeah, I wouldn't vote for it. I don't want to vote for any of them. I hate them both. I hate them all.
Yeah.
There's no one I would vote for.
What about you, Joe? Would you vote? We have to vote here in Australia.
Yeah.
But do we have any faith in our own government system in Australia? What do Australians think? Or do they just not care?
Look, I think we're sitting, it's the most liberal Labor Party I've ever seen, and it's the most Labor, that they're basically cut from the same cloth now. Once upon a time, you could differentiate between the two.
Gough Whitlam comes to mind.
Oh, look, he
was one of the best, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. And am I a Gough Whitlam fan all the way to the bank?
Yeah, and I just want to explain to our international audience, Gough Whitlam was our Prime Minister in the 1970s, and then he got unceremoniously kicked out. Tell us that story.
Well, Malcolm Fraser.
Oh, yeah.
And little Johnny Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Did a deal with Sir John Kerr, who was the Governor General, the Queen's representative.
Yes.
Now, there was a whisper. Now, how true it actually is, who knows? That Gough Whitlam had told the Americans that he would not spy on our Asiatic counterparts, that he would not allow them to set up any listening stations, and that if they had any, they would remove them. Mm-hmm. They went crying to Britain and said, if we get the boot, you'll also get the boot, so I suggest you get your boys into line over there.
Yep.
So Sir John Kerr, or Kerr.
This is the Governor General, who is appointed by the British, just to explain.
Yes, it is an appointment approved by the Queen.
Because we are a Commonwealth country, just like England.
King Charles is our head of state.
Mm-hmm.
And he had done a deal with the Saudis for money outside of the Parliament.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So because they had blocked supply.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not to become a member of OPEC. We have stayed out, which have given us our freedom in relation to petrol, oil, and those reserves. Yep, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, I'm a bit off on a tangent here, but, you know, in the year 2000, there was a referendum here in Australia as to whether we should become a republic or not. And basically we said no. And referendums are few and far between. Mm. I wonder why Australia said no to that. Is that because of the age group, the older people who are very much more, if you like, we're using this term rusted on all the time, but kind of rusted on to the British system, if you know what I mean.
Well, look, I think it is. I mean, I grew up with, you could write a letter to the Queen.
Yes.
And, you know, there was always an appeal to the British government should things go wrong, and you could write to the Queen and you could ask for whatever against here. Now, yes. I'm part of that generation that we still, you know, we all turned out in full school uniform and sang, you know, God bless the Queen, blah, blah, blah.
God save the Queen, yeah. So would you or did you vote, I did, in the year 2000, for us to become a republic? Did you vote that way, or if you don't mind me asking?
I voted against it because the government that we have had in control of Crown lands and assets,
yep,
would need to do a proper accounting before we decided to divorce ourselves from our monarchy.
This is the legal stuff coming out from your brain there. I can feel it.
Yes. I'm very wary of anything that's done as quickly as it can be, because we handed over the rights to precious metals in the 1930s to the Crown. Mm. So gold, platinum, zircon, you know, anything that's worth money is above the ground, and also all the rights to oil and stuff belong to the Crown.
Yep.
So when you go to do these major, when you do a major change, like, okay, we're a republic now, we own everything.
Mm.
I would like to see what we actually own, how it's accounted. It should be done anyway, really, an accounting of all the resources that all the respective state governments have under their domain. And that Crown domain needs to be looked at because, you know, they do own, you know, this owning water to the high tide mark, or they actually control water rights. So there's a whole heap of things that are left over from our British rule that still exist in Australia that people probably in their normal sense are not aware of.
Yeah, that's a very good point. A lot of people aren't aware of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
No, so when you start dealing with, you know, like there are a number of sets of rules that and old laws that are still on the books that have never been repealed and have no sunset clauses, which means they go to bed 5 years from the date they're invoked.
Are you sure you don't want to go into politics? Because I'd vote for you.
Or
are you too honest?
With the Arts Party.
Yeah, the Arts Party.
The Arts Party.
And I've sort of thought about it, but because you would have to run as an independent, and in order to run as an independent, I would have to be involved in local council, and I would have to sort of make my way through the rank and file. Do I want to go and become a Labor candidate? Possibly. Would I become a Greens candidate? I thought about it.
Yes.
But their export, their actual policies for overseas trade, you know, like their other policies are not strong enough. I don't think they've done enough. They don't have enough intelligent people running their policies. I don't think they've got the think tank that they need to set up how you're going to deal with Asia in the 21st century. How do you deal with Asia in the 21st century? What our exports are, what our imports are, control on purchase of land. They're just not standing up probably the way that they used to in the 70s. There's a different ball game now. Everybody's sort of sitting on the same page. Yeah. And I can say that specifically in Tassie, really.
I want to talk about these referenda. I'm sorry, I'm keeping you a bit
nervous. All right, do it.
The referenda that we have in this country, it's all about how it's written. Now, we were talking about, whether we should become a republic. And the Prime Minister at the time was John Howard, if I remember correctly. And is it about the wording of this? I mean, if we look at the yes-no campaign that we've had for Indigenous and Torres Strait Islanders to be able to be represented in Parliament, it was the way that was worded or not worded. But what about these two referenda? Was the wording as important and possibly not clear enough for people?
Rarely does the Australian government ever give true clarification on really important issues, Henry.
Yeah.
And they think that, are we an educated population? Yes, there's a certain level, but when you're dealing with politics and you start dealing with these sorts of issues, I mean, that campaign got scuttled.
Which one are you talking about, the first one?
The yes-no campaign got scuttled.
It sure did. Very successfully scuttled, and just to let our listeners know, all the states voted against representation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders to have a voice in Parliament. Every state, there was two territories, Northern Territory and the ACT. The ACT was the only territory to actually vote yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, what does that say about us? Are we still a racist nation?
No, I just don't think that people understand what it actually was. It was a voice to Parliament. It didn't affect people's, the land rights and all that sort of stuff is still on the table. But what it has done, and I, as much as I regret that we didn't vote yes.
I voted yes.
I voted yes. But,
me too.
The fact that it didn't get up is telling. But what it has done is shone a light on the travesties and the problems that are still within our communities. And I think that perhaps is a good thing because it is and it showed when you see how many people actually did vote yes, it must give some of those communities hope that there are those people that are aware, that are listening, that go, this is wrong.
Not enough of them, though.
You know, look.
Well, the no campaign was just scaremongering.
Oh, absolutely!
It was. It's like, and if you read it, it was
simple.
One paragraph.
Yeah, it was very.
It
simple.
Was so simple that if anybody actually took the time to read it, you would just go, "Oh, no problems."
Well, there was a very, very interesting campaign during that yes, no campaign thing. Very interesting that the ABC, our national broadcaster, actually put out a kind of a 30-second thing where there's two people talking in a pub. I don't know if you've seen it. They're just they're actors talking in a pub, and the end line, the end tag of this was just Google it. Google it.
Yeah, exactly. Just go to the site and read it.
And they actually put up the Google, and you just click on this link on Google, very at the very top, which the government paid a lot of money for on Google, for sure, or someone did. And sure enough, when you Googled it, it explained it. It wasn't as complicated, you know?
Yeah. People, we've got so reliant on TV. And
I was going to talk about the media. Yeah, Channel 9, 7 and 10, I mean, really.
These mass media attacks, which is what they are, I see them as mass media attacks these days.
See,
I don't think you should, I think you have, should go back to what the Americans do, which is town hall stuff. So everybody's got to face town hall.
Yes.
And there's to be no preparation. You give me five questions and that's all I'm going to speak on. I think if you can't cover any question from the audience or get back to them in a week or, you know, I'll get back to you tomorrow, I'll have my office respond to you. I'm really sorry I don't have the answer to that. Instead of fluffing or refusing to take off-the-cuff questions, which is what we've all got to now. There's this careful liability, don't say anything that you could regret. It's very, very soft politicking.
Yeah, which is a pain in the ass. I mean, really. Well, you know, you just watch these people and think, who are you talking to? Are you talking to me? I have a semblance of intelligence, you know? Well, do you get that feeling?
People got sick of it. And look, do people care about what they vote? Once they make their mind up, the Australian public quite difficult to change. So it's important. Once you hit that, there's a point. And the door knocking, there was no door knocking for that.
Yeah.
There was no door knocking for that referendum. Nobody knocked on our door and asked us what we thought.
Is that a thing of the past because of social media, though?
Well, they seem to think that it probably is. But you know what? Because Australia is so regional, it's really important. I learned that from the last time I did this because I didn't understand how to politic, basically. And there is a whole set of things that you have to do. And you really have to sort of, nobody knocked doors, nobody set up meetings, nobody,
Were the yes people just not prepared for this?
Yeah, look, I think they thought that they would get a lot better reception than they actually got because Albanese was so behind it. And nobody was expecting, oh my God, there's a backlash. Like, people didn't actually get it.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And as for Albanese, who is our Labour leader and also the Prime Minister of Australia, I'm not happy with him. And, you know, I've got friends who are, you know, rusted onto the Labour Party, which is our left-wing party, ruling party in Australia. And I'm not. I'm just not rusted onto anyone. And as a commentator on international radio, when I interview politicians or people, I'm very careful not to, you know, push an agenda, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I just am not happy with Albanese. I mean, this man is not what I voted for. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think he's running a very middle ground campaign. I think, has he got the country back on track from the craziness that sort of took us into COVID and out? And the infighting in the Liberal Party is just disgraceful.
Well, that's not good, is it? I mean, that's really bad at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not for the country. The thing is that everyone's missing the point. What is good for the country may not necessarily be great for the party, but party politics is destroying this country as it has done for probably most Western countries. When you play the party and you're fighting one another, you're not looking at the damage you're doing to the country itself and the people. So it's really important. Like Albanese's, I was told he was going to get in probably 4 years before the vote.
Really?
And I laughed. I
did. Is that right?
Yeah, I was told. And I thought,
But wasn't that for the lack of a decent leader of the Labour Party?
Well,
is that fair enough to say?
I think everybody's in bed with one another, and I just, like I said, it's the most Liberal Labor Party
politics I've ever seen,
and everybody's making a dime. You know, everyone's got their spoke in the wheel. They've got their spoke if I went through every politician and said, how many houses do you own? How many houses you bought as properties? Mm-hmm. How many shares did you get in the last in the biotech companies? All that sort of stuff, which nobody's really looking at the corporate side of it. Everyone's just taking on face value what we're being fed. Look, Albanese has a good heart. I think that he's basically a good person. I agree. Is he a strong enough leader of Australia? Probably at this time, we need someone to sort of just get us through out of the Liberal whitewash of spending of trillions of dollars.
You mentioned the media, Joe. I mean, really, I can't watch Channel 9, 7 or 10's news. I just find it pitiful and extremely biased. I mean, Channel 9 were really pushing the no. And this is the news, to end this conversation, I'm just going to blame Queensland for everything. It's all Queensland's fault.
I think you should. I think they are responsible for everything. The banana benders are definitely the problem.
Absolutely. Lots of bananas up there. I drove up there.
So many now.
Yeah, well, the legacy media is bought and paid for, aren't they?
Of course they are.
And you do as the leader tells you, and, you know, the leader's...
Well, they've always, I'm Queensland for all these elections and all these referendums because it's like a different country to me. You know? It's just bizarre.
Yeah. It always was, Henry. I can remember visiting Queensland in the 70s.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
That would have been fun.
I can tell you now that...
Joe Bielke Peterson.
Oh, yes.
Was he the...
Yes, he was.
Was a lunatic.
But he came down here and lunatic Tasmania.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he was very good friends with Robin Gray. He's a Tassie politician from up north. Most of our very powerful pollies are northerners.
And in Tasmania.
Yes, you can see it in the funding for hospitals up there.
Are the roads better up north?
Yes, absolutely.
We have a highway from Hobart to Launceston that, as long as I have been here, it hasn't been finished.
Is that right?
Yeah, they keep that like the. I think there was one time that I actually went from Hobart to Launceston and there wasn't roadworks. Yeah. Maybe one.
Well, I actually, about 5 years ago, myself and the GF, we drove our trusty old Volvo all around Tasmania. I enjoyed it. It was not that we were in a hurry, Paul, because you wouldn't want to be in a hurry with roadworks and all the other stuff that goes on, and, you know, on that island. On iTunes, international, playing all over the planet now. We got to go soon. I just want to tell our listeners a fairy tale. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful woman from Tasmania who visited the Slip Inn, which is a pub in Sussex Street in Sydney, during the Olympic Games in the year 2000, and she met a prince. Can you finish the fairy tale, Joe, since you're from Tasmania?
Yes, well, that very pretty girl that met that lovely prince embarked on a fairy tale adventure, and she's ended up marrying the prince, now to become queen on, well, today, I think.
Today, yeah, tonight, about 11 p.m. our time in Australia, yep.
And she gave him a number of babies because she's good breeding stock. And
she's good breeding stock.
And they're beautiful children, and she has maintained her demeanor. She's been very well trained in the court processes. And Margaret, the queen, must think she's very good queen material. Or she's punishing her son by making a queen. Who knows? But it is quite an amazing thing that a young girl from Tasmania could become queen. And it shows that anything's possible, I guess.
Yes, and here's a couple of interesting things. Queen Margaretha, and I can't pronounce her name without saying Uretha, which is not good. She is actually the fifth cousin of Queen Elizabeth II. Did you guys know that?
Third cousin.
Oh, it's his third cousin.
Yes.
It's very interesting because people have often talked about inbreeding in the royals.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never knew that. And that fascinated me. And of course, Margarita, used a live speech on live television to abdicate from the throne. And I just wonder, you know, if we look at, let's say, in the British royalty, some of these younger royals are not doing too well in the world, basically, in support of royalty. I'm just thinking of Prince Harry, for example. Mm. It's tough for, in her case, it must be tough for her because her whole life changes. She's a public figure. Do you ever think she would have thought, I'll just go back and live in Tasmania? Or are there some people built to do this, you know?
I don't really think she's had much of a choice in it, to be honest, Henry. Once she married in, that's it, you're in. And she's conducted herself beautifully.
She sure has.
And I wouldn't even compare between Prince Harry and Meghan there's no comparison in the way in which she's conducted herself.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's much of a choice there. I think it's quite strict in some ways, but they're also very down to earth. So you don't have quite maybe the pomp and ceremony.
That's right.
Is the British royalty. Mm. And I think it's probably, it is the way forward for the younger generations to prove what they're made of. And I think, I like King Charles's eldest son. I think he's... I think they're doing
William.
They should be William and, but she's beautiful, and always very in control of herself. And I, if you're going to set, and look, I can see the stage set with the younger royals, and maybe there is a way forward for the younger members of the monarchy. Some of the other members of the monarchy you could probably live without. I think we should have, Queen Margrethe's done the right thing as far as saying to the young prince, well, look, I'm sorry, you guys are going to have to go without. You're going to lose your titles. You're not princes and princesses. You're counts and countesses.
There was a rumour that there was tension between this young couple, Frederick and Mary, and that there was a kind of an affair going on. And, I think this came out of the British press, and God only knows the British press are revolting. Is there any truth in that? Do you know anything about it?
No. Well, there was a whisper. She came home with the children on her own without him. But they've been very careful with it. It's sort of like they've splashed a tabloid. He had a meeting with a Spanish socialite. And was there any more than that? There doesn't seem to be, they say where there's smoke, there's fire.
Mm-hmm.
I found it interesting that the Queen Mother would abdicate in order to prevent any further scandal, perhaps.
All right.
And once Mary was made Queen, he couldn't ensconce anyone else. That's sort of like he couldn't do anything else. So does that have any merit? Who knows? But he's been known to... I don't think he was... He's flamboyant, I think, is the word that has been used for his father and perhaps son-like father and, very flirtatious and, quite handsome, obviously.
Yes.
And, why wouldn't you?
Another thing I didn't realise is that he was actually in the Olympics in the year 2000 when Sydney hosted the Olympic Games. He was in there rowing a boat or something, wasn't he?
Oh, really?
Yeah, sailing?
Sailing, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Did you know, Paul?
No, I didn't.
No.
Okay, we must go.
Oblivious to most things except what I do in my studio.
I love what you do in your studio. Those videos you're creating for your fantastic band are just fantastic. I've had a look at some of that stuff. It's fantastic. And talking of you as a band, you guys, from The Sign, THESIGN.com. These guys are so talented, dear listener. Let's pick a song to go out with. What would you like me to play?
Hmm.
Did we send you Sinners?
Oh, you probably have.
Maybe we haven't, because it's not released yet. We have all these things that we haven't even released yet.
Okay.
So you, well, if you like? Hadn't sent it to you, it would be the first. You would be the first one to actually get to play it.
Sorry, what's the name of it?
Sinners.
Okay, well, I'd love to be the first one to play Sinners.
Okay, good.
And I'm just looking through our list of our record of our interviews, and no, I don't have it. So if you could send that to me, we'll play it after this interview.
I will, we will.
Yes, we will, because I thought perhaps it would be fitting.
It would be very fitting, actually.
Yes.
Let's do that. Paul and Joe Volta are in Tasmania, and they have joined me here on the first hour of Bondi Tunes International. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
It's always a pleasure.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
The sun never sets. on Bondi Tunes.